Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host today, Ryan McPherson. And as always, we're broadcasting from the beautiful Regis Executive Suites here in sensational Sandy Springs. As a reminder, make sure you're connected with us on social media, Twitter, at Business Radio X. And today we're using the hashtag Atlanta Business Radio. You can also follow me personally at Ryan Redhawk and make sure you follow the show directly at Atlanta Biz Radio, Atlanta B-I-Z Radio. And all tweets and thoughts are welcome there. And also check us out on Facebook, please, Business Radio X. And now it's my distinct pleasure to welcome to the Business Radio X flagship studio two gentlemen here today to be part of the show. First, Rob Brown with Insight Decision Technologies and Brian C. McCarthy with the law offices of Brian C. McCarthy. Good evening, or good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good evening. Morning. I think I'm still watching the Super Bowl or something. That's why it's top of mind there. So thank you all so much for joining us. Let's just briefly introduce Rob here with Insight Decision Technologies and tell us a little bit about your company and how you're changing the world.
Oh, thank you. Well, Insight Decision Technologies is actually a decision and risk analysis firm. And essentially, we help people to analyze the risk associated with very large capital projects that they may be thinking about. We help them to measure the risk. We help them to measure the value of those projects as well. And then we help them find ways to actually optimize the value against the risk.
Risk, yeah, it's something we have to deal with all day, every day. But you're being able to put it into perspective for those business owners out there.
That's right.
How they should manage risk. Or embrace risk in some cases, too.
In fact, I would say to learn how to live with risk.
That's right. All right, we'll learn more about that, so please stick with us as now we turn our attention to the head honcho over there at Brian C. McCarthy Law Offices. Mr. McCarthy, how you doing, sir?
Not bad. I'm the only honcho.
Oh, you're the only one over there, the grand poobah himself.
It's very easy to be the head honcho when you're the only honcho.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about your law practice. What type of attorney are you?
I do civil litigation, which the easiest way to explain is to tell you what I do not do. I do not do family law, criminal law, or bankruptcy. Civil litigation is everything else in between: contract disputes, probate litigation, personal injury, any sort of business disputes. The only way that we really get involved with any sort of family law is if a married couple owns a business and a divorce lawyer will bring us in to determine the securities litigation of that closely held corporation. But other than that, I would consider myself a courthouse square lawyer. I don't do criminal law.
Do you find yourself in the courtroom doing some litigating?
All the time.
Okay.
All the time.
And do you enjoy that part of your practice?
I do enjoy that part of the practice. I think that it's really one of the ways that a solo practitioner can help out the clients the most, because where the rubber meets the road is really where we are the best. You can get, Coca-Cola is going to go hire a very large law firm, but they are not going to know where the rubber meets the road on a small dispute for a small town business or a small town client.
Is that who normally calls you, as a small business owner?
Absolutely. The larger corporations are going to need a much more wide band of legal work that a solo practitioner just cannot do. Anything from all of the tax opinions to very complex partnerships and business formations. They want to go to one law firm that will handle 20 partners for all 20 of their business sectors. And that's just not something that a solo practitioner can do. It's much more, you'll get a lot more attention from a solo practitioner to a small business or an individual client that the big law firms are they're just not built for.
Right. And so small businesses are the ones who generally come knocking on your door. But how small is it? Can be one sole operator or office of 10 or anywhere in between or more?
Anywhere in between or more. It's amazing. Some of these, you would think that they are a small business until you get into their financials and they do $40, $50 million in revenue a year. It might be just a small commercial landscaping company, but the revenue makes it seem like a much bigger company than it is.
Right. And you can help out them put together, like you said, contract disputes, business disputes as well, and help them solve their issues when it comes to the legal side of things.
And it's really soup to nuts. It's someone coming and wanting to form their business, whether it's an LLC or a partnership or a C Corp or whatever, all the way to any sort of advice on contracts before litigation starts, you're able to recognize the pitfalls that might be litigation in the future, and you can advise them about that in terms of that fork in the road. Any type of litigation with contract disputes or anything like that, when you start to get into the negligence side of it, typically you will have advised them to have an insurance policy, and then those insurance policies have the right to pick that counsel for those types of lawsuits. But anything before that would really be the litigation.
Right. And so that's for you, how you're helping businesses, but don't you help personal individuals as well?
Absolutely.
When it comes to liability, personal injury? I see you help people with dog attacks, product defect, all sorts of different things.
So for the first 9 or 10 years of my career, my principal client was an insurance company here in town where I defended those lawsuits. And so personal injury stuff is really my wheelhouse, just in terms of my experience and how I know to formulate that type of litigation. But those individual clients, whether it be car accidents, dog attacks, like you mentioned, any sort of professional malpractice, all of the injuries that result from the negligence of others.
And that's a kind of a huge space to be in, personal injury. You see ads on buses, you see television commercials during the midday. And so there's a lot of people out there providing these services. Is it because it's needed, or what is your professional opinion on why we see so many out there?
It is an enormous space, and it is needed just because, you know, while we're sitting here right now, there are multiple car accidents happening all over the city. And it's one of those situations where I tell, you know, people always ask me how business is. And I said, well, you know, number one, I haven't fired myself. And number two, there's always going to be car wrecks. There's always going to be a car accident. There's always going to be personal injury that's based on the negligence of others. And there's always going to be people, whether it be a slip and fall in a Kroger or a fender bender in 285 or a, you know, a really bad DUI type of wrongful death accident. Those are always going to be happening. It's just a matter of, people recognize how large the space is, because the hardest thing to do in that business sector is find the cases, find the people that can find you. So, you know, when the internet exploded and when Twitter went crazy and Facebook, and personal injury lawyers are always looking for that next best thing to try and get the clients to try and put as many lines as they can in the ocean, as they say.
No, you're right. I take trips down to the Gulf Coast regularly, and there's one personal injury attorney who has billboards literally from Atlanta all the way to the coast, going down 85 and back and to south and north. And this guy, that's what he does. He puts all his money in the billboards.
And it's, you have the full spectrum of it. That is not my business model. You kind of get, you're strapped by they call them the golden handcuffs, right? Mm-hmm. And so I do not want to build my business to have the infrastructure to be able to handle that.
That volume of business, right.
You go and into the offices of those types of law firms, and there's entire floors that's just a call center.
Right.
The phone is just ringing off the hook. And I just don't want to build that monster, because then you also have to feed that monster.
That's true too, yeah.
And my whole shtick and what I try and tell clients is that, you know, once you're a client of mine, you'll have my cell phone number, and there's a lot of personal attention that is given to that. And it's just not I'm not a demand package lawyer. Mm-hmm. If I take your case, it's because I'm willing to go and try your case in front of a jury.
Right. Well, how does a business actively find you these days? How are you out there marketing your services?
So I have a website, bcmccarthylaw.com. It's that's one way in terms of the Google search. But really what I try and do is I try and build a very large referral network. So criminal lawyer friends of mine who don't do civil litigation, we try and give each other the clients that way. And I just, I learned very early on from a mentor of mine that the easiest way to market yourself is to let every single person that you ever meet know what you do, how you can help them. And it's just amazing how that kind of animal sort of feeds itself. But I have a website, bcmccarthylaw.com. You can send an email through there, or my email address is brian@bcmccarthylaw.com. And my business phone number is 404-207-1518. That is, you know, the internet is certainly out there. I don't have any billboards just because I can't. It really is a monster to feed.
It is.
And I don't, that is just not the type of practice that I want to run.
Well, we'll have Brian's, all his information posted on our website up there by tomorrow, so you can connect with him there for sure. Now, let's talk about a little bit about, you know, when did you go into business for yourself? Did you work at a large practice before, or did you immediately go into your own practice?
I immediately went into my own practice. I went to law school, quote unquote, late in life. I had an earlier career in sports, doing some special events, Olympics. I worked for the Falcons for a couple years. And then I went to law school, and I have a MBA as well. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated from law school, I was older, and I understood that the larger law firms with their salaries also expect you to work a lot. And I kind of fell into, I would love to say that I planned it this way, but I sort of fell into this business model where I had a lawyer who was 4 years out, a lawyer who was 10 years out, and then a lawyer who was 30 years out. And I did all of their first year associate work.
Okay.
So I formed my own business, and then they had their existing clients, and they would give me research projects or depositions or motions to draft. And then they would pay me and bill something to their client. Mm-hmm. As it went on, I started to work more and more with the 10-year lawyer to do the insurance defense work. And it was really amazing the experience that he gave me, just in terms of real, where the rubber meets the road, actually taking a deposition, actually arguing a motion, you know, 1 year into the business, which is just something that you just cannot get anywhere else,
right?
That type of experience.
That real world experience.
Real world experience in terms of, you know, actual, here's a red well, here's a file, draft the motion, go right. argue it. And it really was, I was able to do a lot of things that a lot of my colleagues and my classmates were not able to do.
And we've heard this from time to time here on the Business Radio X Studios. You can be a good lawyer and have your own practice, but that doesn't make you a good businessman or businesswoman. So talk about the differences between a good lawyer running a good practice and servicing your clients, but also putting on that business owner hat and making sure you're marketing, you're you know, keeping everything going in the right direction.
It is really the hardest thing to do as a lawyer, because the only widget that I have is time. And
right.
so you constantly feel as though any time that I spend on that type of growing of the business is time that I am taking away from myself in terms of revenue. And, you know, there's all kinds of sayings that lawyers use, but you know, the biggest mistress that you're ever going to have in your life is your actual law practice. It's always on your mind. You know, you're always trying to do things over the weekend or whatever that you're trying to just cram into some sort of hour that you have so that you don't have to spend that hour on Monday through
right.
Friday. But in terms of the actual business and running the business, I find that the biggest thing that I have learned is to surround yourself with other experienced lawyers and other experienced solo practitioners that you can constantly bounce ideas off of. Mm-hmm. If you're sitting there in an office all by yourself, you get a certain type of groupthink that, you know, you think you're doing something right and you have no experience to bounce that off on. So I'm very lucky to share office space with very good experienced lawyers who have different business models, and we are constantly, whether it's strategy in a actual litigation setting or strategy in terms of a business practice setting, mm-hmm. you can constantly bounce ideas off of one another. Has this worked with your website? What about this ad? How have you found volunteering for this? Has that worked?
Right.
Because all of us sit on multiple boards and multiple type of volunteer organizations, because not only because we feel as though it is our duty pro bono wise, but also it's a great way to get your name out there.
Right.
And it's a great way to interact with other business leaders and whatnot to just try and grow the business that way.
So you find it helpful to share office space with other lawyers as opposed to working out of your home office where you're kind of isolated. You find being connected that way helps you stay, you know, updated and motivated to grow the business as well.
Oh my gosh, I think that is paramount to success. I mean, just not only in terms of bouncing ideas off of one another, but each of the lawyers in my office do something that is just a tad different. So it's sort of like having a big law firm in a smaller office space, because one of their clients could come in and say, look, my client who I do bankruptcy work for just got in a car accident. Can you help them out? And vice versa. Mm-hmm. So it's paramount to success.
Right. And so do you do all the behind the scenes work yourself, or do you have other people like the accounting and some of the book work and all this other kind of stuff so you can focus on the business itself?
So I do the book work myself. It's, you know, QuickBooks is just absolutely phenomenal for that type of thing. Very easy to plug in. One of the other businesses that I share office space with is actually an accounting firm. It's a bunch of brothers that I grew up with in the neighborhood, and we all went to Notre Dame together. So my wife calls it the fraternity house.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It is. And that makes it fun too. But they have, they do my accounting. I have started to outsource some of the stuff just because I've grown in a way that I can not only afford it, but I also I've understood and I realize now that my time can be better utilized other places to get revenue. Mm-hmm. So marketing, there's some popular legal websites. They do my website. The accounting is done with the accounting firms. But other than that, I don't have a secretary. I don't have a paralegal. And it's very easy to keep it lean and mean that I'm able to pass that savings on to the businesses in terms of my hourly clients while also paying the attention that the personal injury clients deserve.
Yeah, you got to balance the time. You got to manage the clients. You've got to make sure the business is on the right track and making sure you're keeping it up to date for sure. Looking forward to the balance of 2016. We've just started the personally as well as your practice.
Well, I'd like to just continue on the even growth. I'm not looking, you know, I have a different perspective, I think, than a lot of folks in terms of what my priorities are. I don't, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of my friends and classmates have started to understand is that when you grow this enormous model of a firm, you have to feed that firm every year. And if I keep my growth on an even keel and just where it is now, I'm able to coach my son's basketball teams and coach my daughter's soccer teams and do those things with my family that's more important to me than just growing this behemoth that's on every MARTA bus. My goal is. However, in terms of the litigation space, the more experience that I've had and the more clients that I've had as the years have gone by, the ease in which more work is coming has made me feel good about the future. What I've told people all the time who want to go out on their own is that surprisingly enough, the biggest fear is that I'm not going to be able to get work or have any clients. And oh my gosh, is there legal work out there? It is just unbelievable how, you know, I tell people all the time that preventive law is always cheaper than curative law. And it is amazing how many people have started to take that into account as they grow their business, that instead of waiting until they get in trouble, they are reaching out to lawyers more and more just mm-hmm. to try and help them move forward in their business.
Right, right. And so as you grow your business to the level that you want to have that good balance of family life and work life. I think we're all striving for that for sure. And you mentioned your family, man. What do you like to do outside of the law practice? Spend time with your family. What keeps you motivated and grounded on a regular basis?
Motivated and grounded. Yeah. I enjoy basketball. I play on a few teams. I enjoy coaching my kids, doing that. Really, it's time that is downtime spent with them in terms of making sure that, you know, they are moving forward. You know, parenting is extremely difficult. It's extremely rewarding, but making sure that the perspective is balanced in all, you know, just the family unit being the most important thing. Vacations, mm-hmm. Just time that is spent, even if it's just, you know, blowing the yard and
right.
that kind of thing.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. The Brian C. McCarthy, he's either out on the basketball court, hanging with his family, or in the courtroom, solving your problems for you and your personal injury or whatever it may be. So make sure you get in touch with Brian and his one-man crew over there at the law offices of Brian C. McCarthy. How can people find you? Tell us our website, phone number, anything.
BCMcCarthyLaw.com. My office is at the corner of 25th and Peachtree. You stop by anytime, really. Appointment is much nicer sometimes, but 404-207-1518. Mm-hmm. And my email address is brian@bcmccarthylaw.com.
And if you find yourself needing to be a client of his, he will give you his personal cell phone number, and you will have that personal contact, so he'll stay up to date on all of your case going forward, so you're not dealing with that whole office of just, you know, people answering the phone. So you get a personal attention, helping you get your civil litigation or personal injury or whatever you may need solved. So thank you so much, Brian, for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right, good. Well, come on back anytime if you have any new exciting news to share, or if you want a big case, we'd love for you to come back on and share with our audience. That'd be fantastic. Thank you again. Mm-hmm. All right, listeners, make sure you are connected with us on Twitter, Atlanta Biz Radio, also on Facebook, Business Radio X and Atlanta Business Radio. All right, now we have our headliner here, Robert Brown with Insight Decision Technologies. How you doing, Robert?
Just fine, thanks.
All right, get in there and lean in that mic. Don't let it whoop you there. So we'll make sure. You are the president and founder of Insight Decision Technologies. As we mentioned at the top of the show, a risk management or risk consulting agency.
It's a risk analysis consulting.
Risk analysis, right? That's, so I think there's two kinds of people in this world. You either like risk or you avoid risk.
And everybody actually has to at least try to avoid some level of risk, right?
What
even that people that are risk seekers, right? I mean, ultimately, they're going to think through how they can minimize their exposure.
Yeah, even those folks who like to base jump or, you know, go high speed on a motorcycle.
They plan and they train.
They do.
They do the things that are required to eliminate the aspects of risk that they can't have some level of control over.
Calculated risk.
That's exactly right.
And now there's some people so adverse to risk that they will never even put themselves in a situation or get close to anything they seem risky.
That's exactly right. And unfortunately, those people actually, I would tend to believe, fail to experience sort of the richness of life, right? That, I mean, life is about taking risks at times, and that's how we create value.
It is, whether it's risk in your personal life or your professional life, risk is all around us every day. As soon as we leave that house, you know, out the front door, we are taking a risk.
Well, in fact, I ran into a bit of traffic this morning on the way down here that caused me to be a little bit late, and that was I tripped over my cat on the way down to my office. That's usually about the only traffic I experience.
Okay.
Because I usually just work where my clients ask me to be.
Right.
But from a business perspective, I would say that the avoidance of risk actually destroys value over the long haul. Mm. It actually does not preserve value the way people tend to think that it does, because you don't expose yourself to sort of the unforeseen opportunities that you don't typically think through when you do sit down to, you know, carry out a calculated risk analysis, let's say.
No, it's a very interesting perspective for sure. So let's go back to the beginning.
Sure.
What's your background? Have you always been involved with risk yourself?
Well, as I said earlier, we're always exposed to risk.
Right.
So yes, I'd say, even going back to the period of time where I tied a brick to my leg and jumped on my grandfather's leg. It was actually more of an engineering experiment at the time.
But, okay.
So I learned kind of early on just because of, I guess, being a boy growing up in rural Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I shouldn't say being a boy. I mean, I'm sure that there are everybody that's always sort of curious and out there looking around and spending a lot of time outdoors, as I did as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
When I wasn't reading, probably my two favorite things in life to do as a kid were
being risky and reading. Yeah,
I admit I'm kind of a geek. I'm an uber geek, probably in some ways, as my wife would tell you. But
you went on to Georgia Tech.
I went on to Georgia Tech.
Yep.
Ultimately, got a degree in mechanical engineering. Started off in aerospace engineering and was in aerospace for 4 years before I realized I probably was not going to get hired as an aerospace engineer, and so transferred my major to mechanical and finished in mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of went on a walkabout for a little bit of time trying to figure out, okay, that was 6 years at Georgia Tech and I'm burned out.
So, right.
And then it took me a bit of time to figure out really sort of what I wanted to do. But ultimately, I wound up working at a local engineering company here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I think a name that probably everybody knows, Scientific Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
And it was actually at Scientific Atlanta that I really sort of discovered what it was that I loved to do. And it combined all those elements of science and engineering that I had grown up ultimately believing that I wanted to be involved in. But it also incorporated aspects of engineering economics, finance, psychology, strategic planning. All that kind of came together into sort of one coherent application, if you will, in terms of my own career. And that's been nearly 20 years ago now, and it's sort of paved the way.
Right, that's kind of a weird amalgamation of different facets of life there, all coming to be. Hey, that's you. That's your personality.
Sure.
That's what you like, and that's what makes our business economy so great. So you began to open up your own shop and start your own business. That must have been a kind of a challenging, or at least a unique time frame in your life.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's certainly at the very beginning. It's unbridled euphoria. You feel like you're probably going to be a billionaire in the next 2 years. And then, of course, reality sets in and it becomes horrifying.
Right.
You know, as Brian was talking about, I mean, you're constantly looking for ways to generate revenue. I set out on my own from Scientific Atlanta, wound up working with a client for a period of time. We worked together extremely well. We started a new business with each other. So I kind of moved out of my own consulting, went into working in a startup. That lasted for about 2.5 years. And then when that came to its sort of natural end. I then joined another firm that was based here in Atlanta that I was with for about 8.5 years. And at the end of that period of time, when the economy basically melted down, I went out on my own.
So you opened your own business in 2008 or 2009?
At the riskiest time in the history of my own life.
Right. You are a risk taker.
Well, it really was not a decided risk that I had taken. I was forced into it, right?
Okay.
I mean, as many of us were.
And
I had to sink or swim. Now, I would say that leading up to those events for the year prior to them, I already had suspicion that it all was going to happen.
So you had this in the back of your mind. You saw it gravitating that way.
And I had already started planning. I had put together a firm just in case. You know, all the legal work was set up. Everything was in place. All I had to do is basically turn on, you know, the lights. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. So middle of October 2008, the firm that I was with sort of more or less shut its doors. They actually survived, and I'm glad for that. But, you know, the firm went from, I would say, nearly 100 employees down to about 12.
Hmm.
And very rapidly.
Right.
We were a very successful firm, and then we were a very not successful firm. But I think they've recovered somewhat. They're actually now based out in Houston.
Okay.
But I was able to very quickly turn on the lights and start trying to generate revenue. Of course, I mean, as probably many people remember during that period of time, 2008, 2009, particularly 2009 and early 2010, we spent a lot of time at Starbucks just sort of staring at each other like we were in sort of a modern soup line, you know? I mean, I would just say, okay, honey, I'm going for, you know, down to the office.
Right.
And I would go to Starbucks and just sit at Starbucks and stare at the wall for a few hours a day. Actually, it was many hours a day.
Right,
But, you know, but actually during that period of time, I was developing a practice.
And then you began to grow the business, see some success, found some of those early clients, began to service them, and more clients came a-calling, and here we are in 2016. And so tell us about the company now.
Well, I'm still a sole proprietor, more or less. The way that I would say that I engineered my way out of the mess of the crash was that I created alliances with a number of different firms where, you know, they have a particular focus on business, doing one particular thing, but the thing that I do complements what they do mm-hmm. in a value-added kind of way. And so by having several of these set up, I know that I will probably get a certain amount of business from each of them over a certain period of time. And so, in fact, a couple of them have led to long-term contracts. So even though, you know, my business is really just me and me alone,
right.
I actually wind up working, actually very similar to the way Brian described, I work with a lot of colleagues who complement and supplement what I do, help me to think more clearly about things, actually, I think, build a team in many ways that I wouldn't have by myself.
And so you share office space? Is that where, like Brian said, he shares an office space with like-minded individuals?
No, actually, I don't share office space exactly because I do have a place in my own residence where
right.
I really spend my daylight hours work. Well, actually, I should say not my daylight hours, my nighttime hours, you know, where I'm actually doing sort of the analysis per se. But usually, the work that I do requires me to go to a client site, and I work on a client site location for some period of time. I travel up and down. I spend a lot of time in Washington, D.C. right now with one particular client and Germany. I've been actually commuting to Munich, Germany quite a bit.
I love Germany. I was stationed there for over a year in the Army, and I would go back time and time again if I could afford it. So,
yeah, you know, I mean, right. I'd give a shout out to my Bavarian peeps here.
Yeah, that's right.
I absolutely love Munich.
Me too.
I have really come to
München.
Love München.
That's right. We as Americans changed the name of the German cities for some reason.
I know.
I don't know why we do that.
But it is. But I mean, I love being there. The people of Bavaria are just wonderful. They are hospitable, gregarious. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just really a great place to go. And in fact, I took my wife and daughter there at Christmas as we were finishing.
Go to the Christmas markets?
Oh, we went to the Christmas markets.
Love
you know, had the Glühwein.
Yes.
Probably had a little too much Glühwein. you know, but they get to enjoy all of the Christmas markets, particularly the big one down in Freiheit, and then,
yeah.
of course, the one in Marienplatz and Odeonsplatz. And then while I was there working with a client and my other colleagues, they, of course, took some time to go see Neuschwanstein.
The castles.
And if you have not ever seen Neuschwanstein, you've actually seen a representation of it in Disney World.
Right.
I think it's the Cinderella's castle.
That's right.
But it is just a remarkable architectural feat. Then, of course, they went over to Salzburg for a day.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, see all that stuff over there. But just the countryside of southern Germany, the people, the food, all that, it's just really wonderful.
I totally would agree, as I spent some time there myself. So let's talk about a current client engagement for you now. Is that something that's just doesn't happen once? Sounds like it happens over time, and they continually use your services.
Sure. Well, I would sort of maybe lay this out in sort of two engagements. The one that I actually mentioned that where I'm going to Washington, D.C. a bit, I do work a bit with some agencies in the
federal agencies.
Federal agencies, right. That, you know, are producing various types of analyses, and particularly risk analyses. And interestingly enough, I'm not actually the person who's producing the actual risk analysis. One of the roles that I've developed over a period of time is actually auditing risk analysis.
So they provide the analysis. You then go back and proofread it.
I go back and more or less proofread it. I recreate the analysis. I prove that the math is essentially consistent with the intention of the math and the analysis. Not that it actually is real. It's another issue. But I mean, I do help to proofread to make sure that the math is done correctly. Which is very similar. I've done other types of things. With people's spreadsheets, say analysis, businesses often produce very large, complex spreadsheets, which, right. by the way, I tell people they shouldn't do as a goal. But anyway, spreadsheets actually are inherently, I think, risky themselves. They mm-hmm. actually introduce risk. And so I have some tools that I use to find errors in people's spreadsheets. So I actually help to identify the things that cause risk at a quantitative level, even before they get to the actual operational level where they would experience risk right. in the real world.
Very interesting. Yeah, risk is all around us, even on your spreadsheets, as we just heard here. So make sure
they're
your spreadsheets
built in,
right,
in ways that you don't even know.
Well, please tell us. I mean, is that something we have to actually pay for to find out, or is there some inside
sure.
secrets you could give us?
I will say this. Until at least recently, particularly if you're doing statistical analysis, some of the functions in one of the most popular spreadsheets, I would say, that are available. Might want to try to avoid a lawsuit here, but the statistical functions themselves were known to be error-ridden. They contained bugs.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
See, most people would just put 100% trust into
Absolutely.
That program.
Absolutely, and you should never do that with any program.
Okay.
But the other, I think the really big problem, though, with spreadsheets is that they actually propagate errors by the way we copy and paste formulas, right? You mm-hmm. create a formula, you copy and paste it. This actually has an error-producing rate that's higher than just the natural rate associated with programming. And there, of course, the errors that they produce are very difficult to find because of the programming or the formulation nature of a spreadsheet. So I take an opposite view. If you think about how spreadsheets are typically organized, right? You open up a spreadsheet, and if you're not automatically put to sleep by the rows and columns of
yeah.
numbers— that's what you see. You see tabulations of columns. I mean, tabulations
right.
of numbers.
Rows and rows of yeah, right. information.
Yeah. And then the next layer down from that sort of tabulation presentation layer is the formulation layer. You click on a cell, you see the formula that's written. Mm. The third layer, which is the layer that is generally the most ambiguous to understand, is the actual logic layer. What is the real intention of the spreadsheet? What is the real relationship between all of the cells? And you can't really understand this until actually you've gone through an auditing process, familiarized yourself with the thinking behind the spreadsheet, possibly interviewed the person who developed the spreadsheet. And so in a sense, not only does that copy and paste process reproduce errors, it makes it very difficult to find them and then to understand why they're there.
Right.
I use another tool. It's called Analytica. It's developed by a company called Lumina, and I've been using it for 20 years now. But Lumina or Analytica takes a completely different approach. That is, it presents model logic first. So we see model logic as a graph or a flow chart. Underneath that, you then can see the formulation layer. So the formulation layer, though, is written in sort of a natural language algebraic type that we were mostly familiar with, that we learned, when we took algebra in high school. And then only after you go through the formulation layer can you see the quantification layer when you ask for it. So the approach with Analytica is logic first, formulation second, quantification last. That's the exact opposite mm-hmm. of a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And I think that approach that spreadsheets take to presenting information is actually what leads to people creating mistakes, propagating them, and not recognizing them. I've seen hundreds of millions to billion-dollar mistakes in spreadsheets
wow.
that had persisted for years. Simply because, number one, actually, this is another problem in itself with people producing spreadsheets. People don't generally have sort of a process of quality assurance behind how they build their spreadsheets, right? They think it's not software development, right?
Yeah.
Anybody can put numbers in a spreadsheet, and they don't think about going back and actually testing their spreadsheets right. for quality.
Well, I'm so glad there's a guy like you on the scene out there taking care of this, because this is something I don't want to have to worry about. But I'm glad you are.
Sure.
And companies are engaging you to help them figure it all out, too. Sounds like the software developers should have you come on and audit their programs, because that sounds like there's some missing pieces there. But if you know what to look out for, and you know how things inherently work, you can put in practices and systems in place to avoid them.
Right.
And that's part of your risk management for you. So what's like the riskiest thing for you in your business?
Wow. So I would actually say there are sort of two really important things to be aware of. And this goes back to an event that occurred to me earlier on in my career, actually when I was with the last consulting firm. And I hope maybe relating this will help people in their own business. But basically, I had gotten into a situation with a client. Actually, the client was a very good client. But the situation was that they were giving me change requests to a very complex risk analysis that we were doing for the development of an oil field in the Gulf of Mexico. We would have meetings, teleconferences on the phone. These would last sometimes 2 hours. At the end of that 2 hours, 30 minutes later, I would get another set of change requests, 30 elements long, right? All these different things that I want changed. And it started to pile up. On the other hand, though, I was very prideful about this whole situation of I can do it, I don't need help, and I let this sort of develop a blister, if you will. I mean, it grew and grew and grew until it got out of control, and all the while, of course, I was developing a huge amount of stress and anxiety about this situation. Same period of time, I started to develop some symptoms that indicated something very serious was going on inside my abdomen. And so all this sort of came to a head. And again, I kind of kept saying, I don't have time to deal with these symptoms. In fact, it can't be anything really serious. I'll just take some more Maalox or whatever, and it'll go away. And so actually what happened was essentially I collapsed in Houston. And actually the night before I was supposed to go in to see my client, I had a terrible bout of what turned out to be gallbladder disease.
Oh, man.
And I walked into his office the next day after I kind of forced myself. I drank a pot of coffee, took a cold shower to try to, wake myself up, walked into his office, and he looked at me and said, "You've got to go to the hospital right now." And I said, No. We'll just give me some coffee and we'll just work right through it. And he said, "No."
Wow.
So ultimately what this led to was it wound up causing a number of problems actually with the client, because there were some things that had not been addressed. My pride had gotten in the way. And then, of course, we had to shift over to another person to pick up the work that I was doing. And by the way, the guy who took over is a brilliant guy. He and I are still colleagues and friends. But he still had to come up to speed, right? I mean, he had to pick up where I left off, and he had to go back and review my notes, all that stuff. I guess the point is that in the long run, you have to learn to take care of yourself. And you have to learn to listen to your body telling you that you're not healthy and you need to take care of your health. And that's also your mental health, which implies, first of all, don't believe you can do everything, because you can't do everything.
Right.
And you shouldn't try to do everything on your own. So I would say taking care of that, your mental and your physical health is of primary importance, particularly if you're a sole proprietor, because if you go away, the business goes away. And if there are any other people that depend on you for regular income,
it's good advice for sure. Certainly listen to yourself first. Don't ignore any sort of pre-warning signs. Usually things happen gradually and then all of a sudden. And if you don't pick up on something gradually, that all of a sudden will catch you when you're sleeping.
It's just like a bridge or an aircraft, cracks develop. Mm-hmm. You overlook the cracks, and then suddenly there's a catastrophic failure.
Right.
When you least expect it. When in fact, if you had been, you know, I guess perspicacious about, you know, the situation, if you'd been monitoring it and aware of it, you would have caught those things before they actually erupted into something bad, mm-hmm. really bad. But the other, I guess maybe the other thing that I would also point out, particularly to people that are developing a solo practice or an entrepreneurial type practice. In fact, I'll even again mention Brian talked about this as well, always looking for new ways to generate revenue. One of the problems, of course, with being a solo entrepreneur is that you are time and materials driven. And there's only so much time in the day. And as Brian said, you know, his widget is his time. Actually, this is a very common feature of, you know, of time-based service providers. You have to find some way at some point to generate revenue that's passive in nature. Mm-hmm. I've not done a great job of this, I have to say. I've been working on developing this. But, you know, ultimately, I will think, ah, I'm booked. Last year, I was booked throughout the whole year by March. I had my entire year planned out. And by May, I lost more than 80% of it, because clients basically changed what they wanted to do. And suddenly I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to get out and start hustling. But I had allowed myself to get lazy, you know, and I've been doing this now for 20 years and I still got myself lazy, right? I still allowed myself to get lazy because I thought, you know, I'm on easy street now. I'm sorry. You know, I've got everything taken care of, and I didn't. So it's taken a couple of things like that over the years to say, you know, you really need to start working on ways to generate passive revenue. When you can. So I would love to be able to get to the point where I'm just sitting back and drinking coffee all day long and just watching, you know, money roll into my bank account. That's probably not going to happen, but I can probably do some things. And I think we can all find ways to sort of supplement what we're doing, mm-hmm. Whether that's, you know, doing online classes, writing a book, or developing some other sort of side, you know, hustle, as some of us call it, that doesn't take a lot of time and effort, but does generate something that can fill in the cracks.
Maybe you can start your own podcast on risk analysis.
Maybe I could.
You know, we'll set you up with a studio in your home office there, and, you know, a couple hours a day or a couple hours a week, you get down there, and because you've got a lot of good inside information, lots of experience in the industry, and I know there's a lot of other players out there in this space, and you guys can start sharing best practices, lessons learned, all those things, and people want to know.
Sure.
About all this information for sure, because it certainly is so many layers to it, and we're not able to dive into it all here today, but if you want more information about Rob Brown and his company, Insight Decision Technologies, you can go to his website, www.insightdecisiontech.com. They're also on Twitter, at Insight Decisions. Follow him there. Stay updated on his latest and greatest tweets, and you're on LinkedIn or anything else? People can connect with you there?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn. The unfortunate thing is if you look for Robert Brown on LinkedIn, you're going to be, you know, hit with 50,000 Robert Browns.
Right.
I think, in fact, Robert Brown is probably the fifth most common name in the United States. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but it is the Robert Brown associated with Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
I'm the really handsome, you know, no, I'm just.
Yeah. What do you like to do here in Atlanta in your off time? Are you a family man? What do you like to do when you're not changing the world of risk analysis?
Well, I am a family man.
Good.
I have three children. They're actually all pretty much grown now. My oldest is 21. He's at Belmont College in Nashville. He actually has his own business there with his some roommates. They've actually started a company called Amplify Entertainment Group. So this has actually turned into something that I've enjoyed to watch. You know, my own son, my oldest son, is
becoming your entrepreneur.
He's an entrepreneur with his roommates, and they are changing the world of emerging artists.
Wow.
I would say they're providing new ways for emerging artists to be seen and heard.
Well, we love to get him on the radio. We were just in Nashville a couple weeks ago doing interviews of local business leaders, and we'll be going back up in a few weeks. So we will exchange some information off air and get him featured on Nashville Business Radio.
I bet he would
powered by Business Radio X here pretty soon.
Yeah. So my middle son, he's in college at Wheaton in Illinois, and my daughter is 17. She's actually still here. She's a senior in high school, but she's a competitive figure skater, and she's actually up in Minnesota this week training. But you know, my wife and I've gotten to that point where we're facing being complete empty nesters very soon, I would say. And, but you know, we love going out and eating. We love the Atlanta, restaurant life. Although personally I haven't set aside the time for myself to do it lately, but I love to kayak. I love to hike.
Okay.
We do a lot of hiking. And, you know, Georgia is just such a wonderful place to live in my mind. I've lived here all my life, traveled around the world, and I keep coming back and thinking, you know, this is just a great place. Mm-hmm. I even tell people that I even love the stuff that I hate about Atlanta. I mean, you know,
the traffic.
Well, I don't love
the weather in the summer.
But I mean, we just finished our winter, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I mean, well, we might be facing another
something
here in the next couple of days. But I mean, seriously, Atlanta is just a great place to be.
I concur 100%. I'm born and raised here. I've moved away several times, lived all over the world, and I came back to Atlanta because I do believe this is a great place to do business, connect with people, and raise a family.
And enjoy the outdoors as well. I mean, we have access to so much. We have the city right here, and yet surrounding it, it's very rural still. Of course, the mountains are to the north of us. Great places to go hiking, great places to go kayaking if you like that. Of course, Lake Lanier. And many of the other surrounding lakes are great places for lake life. And then, of course, the coast is not that far away. Savannah, St. Simons, Jekyll Island, all those are just Cumberland Island even. I mean, there's a great places to go and with your family just to get out and have an exposure to a different world than what we have here in Atlanta. And it's all within, you know, less than a day's drive.
No doubt about it. Even within the metro area and just outside the perimeter here, there's some great places to go and get lost in the wilderness. So thank you so much, Rob, for joining us. Tell our listeners again one more time how they can find you and your organization.
Sure. Well, website is insightdecisiontech.com, and that's I-N-C-I-T-E. Of course, you could find me on LinkedIn. All these links are present on my website. Twitter handle is Insight Decisions, and email address is rdbrown@insightdecisiontech.com. And in fact, if you are interested, if you don't mind me making a little plug
for this,
this coming Tuesday, February the 18th, let me get my information here. I will be speaking at Georgia Tech at the Scheller College of Business, in conjunction with the Data Science and Business Intelligence Society of Atlanta. So if you're on Meetup and you have any interest at all in the sort of the field of data science and business intelligence, we are sort of, co-hosting with Georgia Tech on this event. The topic that I will be speaking on is entitled Becoming a Business Analytics Jedi, an Application of Values-Framed Decision-Making. And that will be, again, at Georgia Tech at the Scheller College of Business, Classroom 100, February the 18th at 11 a.m.
Is that free? Or is there a charge for that?
I don't know.
Well, find the information.
But I think it actually is free.
It should be.
It
should be. Yeah, it should be for sure. So that's good. You enjoy speaking engagements? You enjoy that kind of opportunity to teach others?
I do. In fact, the early part of my career after I left Georgia Tech, I wound up teaching math and physics for a couple of years. And so for those students who still haven't tracked me down to take revenge, you know, I'm still here.
Okay.
But still teaching. I mean, a large part of what I do is actually teaching. And I do enjoy sort of the public speaking. I actually do teach classes on the software that I mentioned earlier. I am one of the, I think right now the only teacher for the company.
Okay.
So I travel around the world, in fact, sometimes teaching these classes how to use Analytica. And I also teach classes on decision-making skills. I teach people how to think about how to make the best decisions they can make. I can guarantee, in fact, you'll always make a good decision.
Well, thank you so much. You made a good decision on coming on Atlanta Business Radio to talk about your business. We love to feature you again here soon. So please come back and be a guest anytime. And before we get out, we'll remind our listeners too, Brian, how can they find out more information about you and your law practice?
BCMcCarthyLaw.com. I'm also on Twitter at BCMLaw, and I am on LinkedIn, although I have no idea how many Brian McCarthy's are out there. I'm the lawyer in Georgia.
Okay. And it seems like today's show theme might have been something about solopreneurs. And we didn't really envision that before we got you guys on the show, but both of you guys are doing great things on your own, but with the support of others as well, some colleagues, some family members, all those supporting you. So thank you, Brian, once again.
I love that term. Did you just make that up?
It just came to me. Solopreneur.
That is really good. I'm going to use that.
All right. Yeah. Hashtag solopreneur, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
And thank you, Rob, for coming in today. And thank you, listeners, for joining us here on Business Radio X and Atlanta Business Radio. If your company is doing something genuine to serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out directly on the website and pitch us your story at businessradiox.com. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Redhawk. We will see you on the radio.